Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremham.
And I'm Lara Chan Baker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group, which is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. Each week, our two offices come together to celebrate the people and processes that operate behind the scenes to make creative work happen, as well as some of the thoughts and tools that are shaping our industry. While we have a certain focus on advertising, illustration, and animation, the topics and ideas discussed here should hopefully be of universal value to those on both sides of the equation of the applied arts. This podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as the bridge between clients and creatives. It's an ongoing exploration of how to wrangle the creative process to achieve excellence no matter what the medium. This week, we have a bit of a doubleheader as we welcome identical twins Tom and George McQueen, art director and copywriter team at Drugify New York via Country Melbourne. We'll be discussing all the questions that are inevitably on your mind right now, like which is the good one and which is the evil one, and which of the two movies that came out in 1988, Schwarzenegger and DeVito's twins versus David Cronenberg's Dead Ringers, which was the better one. But first, how is everyone? Lara, how are you?
I'm okay. I tried to wear brand new leather shoes to work today and the blisters were so bad. I just had to walk barefoot from the station. I must have looked like I was doing a walk of shame.
I'm going through the same dilemma right now. My feet are just so cut up.
I got to say, the Band-Aid literally feels like you're putting skin on top of your skin.
Yeah, but they work. B, how are you?
Jeremy, I kind of understand why you left this place. I don't know why it's not spring yet. It's about to snow again tomorrow. I mean, it's beautiful outside, but it's bloody freezing and I'm just kind of over it.
Yes, it helps to be hermetically sealed in my little bubble of air conditioning here.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever get used to the Northern Hemisphere winter. But yes, how are you doing, Jeremy?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Lara and I just finished our weekend of hosting the Good Copies inaugural crossword competition.
Word alert.
Word alert, yes. It had its heated moments at the National Gallery of Victoria.
I mean, crosswords are a heated sport, Jeremy.
It was very heated. It was really fun. The one thing that I couldn't help but notice, so many people walking the NGV. I mean, we were hosting this on a raised platform outside the water wall, and like so many people were at the NGV. I was trying to get in there afterwards just to see the art. I didn't see anyone walk out. I saw a lot of people walk in. So I want to know what's going on.
Yeah, they trapped them in there. It's part of the triennial.
It's part of the art. Exactly. excellent. So we're going to get started with our open tabs, a bit of a selection of what's been going around our professional development Slack channel this week. And I think, B, you're going to get us started with an app that you linked to called Moment. Tell us a bit about this.
Yeah, so as you two know, I'm really interested in the effect that smartphones and social media have on us, for better or worse, which is definitely usually worse. And I think moving to New York, it's kind of really highlighted for me like how anxiety inducing like passively using technology can be. And so one of my goals for this year is to try and cut back on the amount of time I spend on my phone. And something I've been trialing over the past few weeks has been this little iOS app called Moment. So you keep the app running in the background of your iPhone and it automatically tracks how much time you spend on your phone each day. I've been using it, I think, for about a month now. And the insights have been so scary and so sobering. It's kind of embarrassing to admit. But
what's your average time of the day?
I spend on average about 4.5 hours a day on my phone, which is mostly made up of mindless scrolling through Instagram and Twitter. On a good day, though, when I'm actually like engrossed in work and I'm doing things like I'm cooking and going to the gym and spending time with friends and I'm sleeping well, that's like my number one culprit. My phone use is coming around the 2 hour mark, which I think is pretty good, but I'd like to get that down. And I think, surprise, surprise, my overall mood and productivity and outlook on those days is generally much more on the positive side of things. But on a really bad day, and this has happened like 2 or 3 times over the month, especially when I'm not sleeping well and when, yes, Lara, I am tagging you in many garlic bread related memes.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah. And my phone has been on like the 6 hour mark, which is just like so gross. I feel like so embarrassed to admit that. But anyway, it's an interesting exercise. And
I downloaded it last night. You'll remember it does like an initial average of your screen time. It's pretty cool. It's like you take screenshots of your battery usage and it sort of reads that and does like an initial average. But I won't have the full data until like I've actually used it for a little while. But my average time based on that was 2 hours and 43 minutes a day, which I think is huge, but apparently it's a lot lower than you, Bianca. But I think we should all install this and do an update on the podcast like
in a month
next week. on our usage or in a month, and just like see what comes up for each of us and if we find it useful.
I'll definitely give it a crack. I mean, I haven't used this app particularly. I do find that these apps are a bit problematic in terms of how you have to set them up and, you know, some of the hacks that you have to kind of work around to actually make them work properly. And I think my understanding is that Apple hasn't really kind of opened up the full kind of iOS ecosystem to actually do this kind of metrics. And I think, you know, they would have a vested interest in not doing it. But yeah, it's definitely something that I'm interested in, along with other kind of things that are kind of a lot of things that are happening in the, I guess, in this kind of conversation at the moment, like people turning their screens to grayscale, I'm noticing a lot of people using as well, like kind of just to make the experience less sticky. So I will give it a shot and we'll report next week. My link of the week is something that I think, look, this has been doing the rounds tremendously. We're going to be talking about on our next issue, another kind of major corporate blunder. But the one that I think was at the top of everyone's mind this week was with H&M and the artist Revoke, where basically H&M shot a campaign, and in the campaign they used it featured very heavily Jason Revoke Williams's artwork in the background. Jason kind of filed suit, and then H&M kind of filed countersuit, which would have set a very kind of broad precedent in terms of, you know, the rights that they would have to, or that any company would have to use street art or any kind of, you know, art in kind of advertising in this way. And that sparked an enormous backlash on Twitter. I mean, I think every artist that I follow had something kind of in their stories, in their feeds, everything. There was a whole hashtag that kind of developed as well. And at the end, they ended up kind of withdrawing their claim in court, saying that they respect the creativity and uniqueness of artists no matter what the medium, and that they should have acted differently in their approach to the matter, which is just a very tone-deaf statement. I mean, I just don't know how they thought that this was a good idea in any like way, shape, or form, especially kind of how things are going at the moment.
I mean, it's ridiculous and also not surprising. It's sort of like another week, another social media campaign to boycott H&M. They are blundering left, right, and center. It's insane. And you're right, like the coverage on this was enormous. It was in every publication from like GQ to the Washington Post to Teen Vogue. It definitely sort of very much reflects that sort of utter confusion on all sides about how we're meant to deal with copyright and usage in a world that is so sort of fueled by both like freedom of creativity and outright capitalism. Yeah. And as you said, the main concern here was definitely that dangerous precedent that it could potentially set, you know, in court if it were to be deemed that the illegal nature of the work somehow negated the copyright protections, because that's what H&M were arguing.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think it brings up so many interesting questions. And I think, you know, how can you take any kind of like street photograph at the moment and not capture another work of design or creativity kind of somewhere? I mean, this happens all the time with architecture. We have this question come up a lot with our clients when we're getting a brief that has to involve some kind of landmark, like most notably the, you know, the Sydney Opera House, for example. And I think there's no kind of real clear-cut answer at the moment. I mean, especially when it comes to kind of copyright and all these things. But I think that I don't know if the act of what happened was as bad as kind of how it was actually kind of handled.
I agree completely there. I think, yeah, absolutely. That's where I get stuck as well, because I think, of course, on the one hand, we all have this incredibly strong desire to protect the rights of artists, you know, to be in control of the works that they create. And then on the other hand, as you said, when artwork is put in such a truly public space and is so prevalent, you are hard pressed to find a wall in New York or even in some parts of Melbourne that doesn't have some form of graffiti on it. I think, you know, I also do have concerns about how those protections could limit the creativity of others. But then again, the more I think about it, this isn't about limiting creative projects as a whole. The argument was very specifically about a big brand using the work for a strictly commercial purpose in a way that the artist would have been opposed to. Because he originally sent the cease and desist, and he wasn't asking for compensation. He was asking for them to stop. He just didn't want people to think that he had created the work for H&M.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, and I think that the interesting thing, I think the work is such a prominent part of the campaign imagery. Like, it's not like it's an incidental, like they've just, you know, like they've shot a street and you can kind of see this work in the background. Like, it's so hero. Like, it feels to me that the energy of the artwork actually kind of informed the look and feel of the campaign. Like, I feel like it was not an accident.
I completely agree. And then where I get stuck again, though, is like figuring out how they were meant to go about this differently, because supposedly they sort of did do their due diligence in asking the council body whether or not they needed to pay the artist for the rights to use the work in the shoot, and the council, the ones who said no. And so like in cases where it's impossible to find out who actually created the work, does it mean that it can never be used anywhere? Or I just don't know.
There's a quote from a Hypebeast article that really summed it up for me, which was a quote from Revoke's lawyer, who is the streetwear's favorite lawyer. And he basically said, regardless of how anyone may feel about the underlying legal issue of illegal graffiti being protected, The real concern here is that while H&M sees value in using graffiti art in their advertising to boost their revenues and appeal to their target demographic of young people, they also appear to simultaneously undermine and discredit graffiti artwork from the culture via this legal action.
Oh, completely. And I mean, they fucked with the wrong subculture.
There's a lot of kind of conversation happening right now. I think we're going to post links. Actually, for our next episode, we're going to have a very big chat about something kind of similar that's a bit kind of closer to home. But for the meantime, we're going to post links to some various kind of Instagram posts from some other artists who kind of shared their own opinion on it. And yeah, look, it's great that it's making it into the conversation. But yeah, there's a lot to pick apart here. Laura, let's round out with your link for the week.
Yeah, so this is a piece that I came across via, I think it was Ad News or Ad Age newsletter. I don't know, one of the many industry newsletters. But it was a piece on the Financial Times, which the article was called Hedge Funds Amass Big Bets Against World's Leading Advertisers. So it was interesting because I think for those with growing fears about the health of the ad industry, the Financial Times really had sort of something rather significant to add to it this week. Basically, they reported that hedge funds have amassed bearish bets of more than $3 billion against the world's largest advertising companies in an attempt to profit as the industry undergoes wrenching disruption and slowing growth. So really, it seems that funds sort of left, right, and center are taking these short positions in massive amounts, predicting that they're going to make some pretty hefty gains as the stocks continue to fall. So they report huge shorts in shares of companies like Omnicom Group, Publicis, and WPP, with the hope to make a lot of money out of this sort of increasing financial pressure that the ad industry has faced, as many companies are shifting their marketing budgets to Facebook and Google and in-house. So the article also points out, yes, that traditional advertising groups have really suffered from sharp cutbacks in marketing spend at large consumer product companies like Procter & Gamble and Kraft Heinz, who have themselves come under pressure from these activist hedge funds and strategic investors to cut costs in the face of shifting consumer tastes towards small startup brands. So for example, like just earlier this month, the chief brand officer at Procter & Gamble, who are the world's largest advertiser, said that the company would take back control of its marketing by moving more of it in-house, which I think just further underlines that challenge that's facing the industry. What do you guys think?
It's an interesting perspective for these hedge funds to have. Depends how much kind of stock you put in hedge funds. Sorry, that was a bad pun, but totally unintentional. Do you know about this? Warren Buffett in 2007, he entered $1 million bet with a fund manager saying that the S&P would kind of beat a basket of hedge funds over kind of the next decade. And that decade just actually passed and he won. So
wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So, it turns out that, you know, hedge funds,
can you imagine just having $1 million to just like throw away like that on a bet?
And a bet over 10 years. I love Warren Buffett. He's such an interesting guy. But yeah, look, I think it's an interesting perspective, but like, I don't know if there's actually kind of like a lot of merit to it. I mean, but maybe they know something that we don't. Well, we will put the links to all of these pieces on our show notes as we do every week at our podcast website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. You can also get these links every week in our podcast specific newsletter. Sign up at tinyletter.com/JackieWinter and we will move on from here. Continuing along on our theme of tracking down every single Australian currently living in New York and interviewing them on this podcast, we get to cross not one, but two names off of our interview bucket list today. Currently ranked number one copywriter and number one art director in the Cannes Lions global rankings, respectively, Tom and George McQueen spent 4 years at Clemenger BBDO here in Melbourne, producing some of the most memorable and effective campaigns in recent years. Most recently, and most notably, the Meet Graham piece for the TAC, along with artist Patricia Piccinini, before moving over to the Big Apple, where they are currently stationed at Droga 5 and doing us all very proud. We're so excited to have them today to hopefully bring a new perspective to the conversations we've been having here, as I think this is the first time we've actually heard from the perspective of creatives, especially as a team and especially identical twins. So Tom, George, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be on here.
Thank you.
Now, I'm curious. I mean, you were kind of sitting back while we were talking about this kind of H&M debacle. I'm curious, as someone kind of who is a creative and also kind of in New York, did you see this kind of bubble to the surface? And what were your kind of thoughts as creatives?
I did see the articles on it just recently. And I mean, it's a bit of a dicey one for me, as to the points you guys were making before, to not sort of, when it features so prominently in the actual work, I feel like to not have that cleared and not, it really is an integral part of that piece. So I mean, it seems pretty dicey to just dance around that and use it anyway and not sort of get it checked off with the artist.
I mean, you know, maybe a good producer could have helped that. Yeah. Only listen to our podcast. Now, I want someone to explain these CANS rankings to me, because I hear so many of these rankings and numbers kind of like, you know, sloshed around. And so who's the number one copywriter? Who's the number one art director? Where do these numbers come from? And can I have your autographs?
You tell me where these numbers come from. I guess I'm the writer by, I don't know how you want to even say it. George and I are a bit of a mixed match, really, but I guess, you know, someone has to have that title. So by default, I fall into the writer and George is the art director. And we've kind of stuck with that rule for the last couple of years now, haven't we, George?
Yeah, it's been sort of a running theme, but we cross over a little bit. I feel like with any team, you sort of have to both jump in and divvy up and conquer and divide at times. So there is a bit of crossover there.
But these rankings, I mean, I guess it's all based off, it's the work in review, really. I mean, the year in review, as I should say. And it all comes from that, really, that, you know, how this work is spread across Cannes and then other award shows throughout the year. And then they divvy up these rankings. But to be honest with you, I feel like I don't follow that stuff religiously as maybe I should. And I'm not 100% sure how they actually get to this final figure.
Yeah, who are you paying?
Where this comes from. Yeah, exactly. A lot of money got under a table.
I knew it. Well, look, I mean, it's pretty bloody impressive. What is it that makes your partnership work? Like, what have you got that other siblings and creative teams don't?
I don't know. I honestly think any good creative team, you become like a bickering couple, or like a brother-sister or brother-sister relationship. And George and I just have that already because we've spent so long together. And I think, you know, you see creative partners, they are like married couples in the way they work, the way they you know, come up with ideas and bicker with each other. So it's quite funny to see that. And I guess
in the way one sleeps on the couch and one sleeps in the room.
Exactly. Yeah, and one cooks dinner for each other. No. But I think over time we never planned to work together, and that we just kind of fell into it. But in how it's all fallen out, I guess we're just naturally, we know how each other works now. And we just kind of skipped a step that, I guess, getting to know a creative partner, if someone's new to the job and finding, you know, a new person to work with, we've kind of jumped that hurdle really quickly in our career. So it just helped. You know, there was none of that dancing around the issue or being polite with one another about, you know, ideas and how these come into fruition. It's kind of, we can just be quite blunt and honest with each other, which I think helps when you're trying to get the work done and get the best out of each other.
Do you have creepy psychic twin powers?
I feel like everyone always asks us that question.
Yeah, because I really want to know.
I do think when we're on a roll, we just honestly, I feel like George and I just talk so fast at each other, and anyone else in the room would be like, "What are you talking about?" But we just understand each other. Like, it's that you're on the same wavelength, which I think if you work with someone for so long, you probably learn the ins and outs of their behavior and their mannerisms. So, you know, it's probably quite similar to that, but no actual ESP kind of stuff to date, I don't think.
So let's step back a bit. So you're both from the country Victoria. And how did two boys from the country who grew up as vegetarians, never ate meat, skateboarded, how did you end up here? I mean, how did you end up in New York in advertising?
It's a pretty good question. I feel like every time I speak to my parents, they're like, "Well, still going, still sold out to the man."
What did your parents do? Like, what was the industry where you grew up?
My dad is like a stonemason and like a landscape gardener, so he sort of was very much in the garden all the time and does like sculptures and stonework out of dry stone walls. And our mum is an English history teacher, so she's sort of more in the academic side. So they're a different kind of mix, but they're both in their own right of pretty creative people. So I guess from that, I think being in that environment, they were always sort of, were always interested, you know, in art and music and all those sort of things. And I guess after you sort of dabble in those and then realize that you need to also make a living, you sort of, the natural next step was sort of advertising and graphic design and all those sort of hurdles that you end up in. And then we eventually sort of fell into a career in advertising, I guess.
That's a very abridged way to put it. It's also interesting. You can tell who is the mama's boy and who is, you know, the one more associated with dad. It's so interesting, you know, with the writing and image background, I guess, right there from the start. What planted the seeds, like, you know, for this kind of career, though? Like, you know, how are you kind of getting culture and everything kind of in such a remote location?
Where we were too was really remote. Like, it wasn't even a country town. It literally is the middle of nowhere. Like, there's probably a population of like 8 in this little shire.
Oh my God.
Whatever you call it. Which, you know, it was amazing as a kid because, I mean, our parents still don't have the internet. They don't have a computer.
and they don't have mobile phones, which I love. Like, they're very...
they can't call you every day and see if you're eating. Yeah.
Very disconnected from technology. But when we were kids, and I'm sure a lot of people are like this from my generation too, we didn't have, you weren't glued to the TV or glued to your phone or glued to a device all the time. So we would just draw and make things all the time because there was nothing else to do in that environment. And, growing up in like this beautiful countryside, we would just sit for hours and draw and do that sort of thing. So I felt like at an early age, I always wanted to be a cartoonist actually and do that. I was just obsessed with this show Art Attack, and I'd watch that like all the time.
But when did you make a deliberate decision that you were going to kind of, work together, work as a team? Is that something that kind of happened at an early age, or is that something that kind of happened organically, or was it a deliberate decision?
Oh, it happened. It actually happened a lot later. So we originally, after living in the country for years and then moving to the city, and going to university. After that, we both sort of, Tom fell straight into a sort of job into advertising, and I was more working as a graphic designer. And then we actually, for the first few years of our career, worked at separate agencies. And it wasn't until, how long have we been working together now, Tom?
Probably say 8 years now, probably.
Yeah, so probably 8 years ago, whatever, the agency Tom was working at kind of half folded. And then he came and worked at the place I was working at, which was Reactive Media, and which is more a digital agency. They sort of partnered us up a bit more there, and we started working as sort of conceptually together. And they were like, oh, you guys seem to work pretty well together, because you know exactly how each other works and what you're capable of. So
yeah, exactly.
So we sort of started to working together there a bit more, and then that just sort of took off, and we just sort of kept doing that. And then we sort of over time just kept moving to different places together and always sort of staying as sort of your classic, I guess, advertising partnership. But yeah.
So were you guys both at M&C Saatchi?
We were, yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because I used to work at M&C, and I think you guys had just left, like literally just left when I started, because everyone was still talking about how you guys had just left, and I had no idea who these twins were, the twins. Yeah, and it's so funny. So I've just sort of vaguely sort of knew who you were earlier, and then obviously heard more and more about your work, and then of course Bianca was friends with you, and I sort of heard from you via there, and here we are now. But I wanted to ask, obviously, you had all this time working in Melbourne, and then, obviously now the move to New York. So I wanted to ask, why the move to New York? And do you think creatives need to get out of Melbourne to do well?
Not at all. I actually think I love Melbourne. I think the industry there for advertising especially, and even graphic design and the arts, is amazing. And I think it is world class. Like, I don't think you do have to move to the other side of the globe to do, award winning or world class work at all. Like, agencies, Melbourne bats incredibly high for the work you can pull off. There's some incredible agencies that, so no, not at all. I think you definitely can have a hugely successful career from Melbourne.
So why did you guys move off to New York?
I think it was honestly a long time coming for us. We'd visited a lot separately and together. And our partners were also sort of interested, they work in sort of creative and fashion sort of fields as well. So for them,
Tell me, they're not twins as well, are they? Because that's
that would be super weird.
Okay, cool. Just had to check.
It wasn't a decision based on, I have to get out and I want to get out of here. It was definitely more a, if I don't do this now, I'll blink and I'll be, 30-something and not have done something that I've always wanted to just sort of tick off. Yeah. So it was...
Hey, 30-something's not that old.
I just shot Jeremy a look they think you're old.
Yeah, still got it.
It was more an age thing, definitely. Like, hey, now's the right time to sort of go overseas and do the whole living abroad rather than a creative decision, I think. Like,
totally. And are you guys living together there as well? Do you ever get sick of each other?
God, yeah, George and I are actually neighbours.
Yeah.
And so I guess what are the biggest differences then that you've noticed working in the US versus working in Australia?
There's different things. Like, I mean, we've been here nearly on a year now, I think. We're just about to hit a year. And it's funny coming to this market, I think, in the way they work. Like, the scale of stuff you can do here is just, you can't even compare it to Australia in the sense that their budgets and their access to sort of resources and people they can work with so easily is just, it's so much easier to be able to do that stuff. And those conversations can happen so much quicker, which, being in Australia, you are at a bit more of a disadvantage in that sense. Not to say it can't be done. It's just, it is harder to pull off. So I think, for production and producers in Australia, they have to work so much harder, I think, than production over here in some regards with, getting to that quality or that standard of work that is probably easier to sort of achieve when you're based somewhere like America.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. So, I mean, you guys work as creatives and you're creating advertising campaigns every day, whatever they are. I mean, what role does a producer play in your daily life at work? And can you call out, are there any particular differences between how the role is run in Melbourne compared to New York?
I don't think the role's necessarily different. I think the same sort of, they approach situations in a very similar manner. I think just the difference to me for, say, a Melbourne producer or to a New York producer is in Melbourne, you sort of learn to be so much more like nimble, I guess, with how you have to tackle things, just because the budget's smaller, of course, you've got a different sort of level of, like, you know, talent or directors or whatever that you can get within that budget. So you learn to just make sure, you know, scrappy in the right way, in a sense of the word, of being able to sort of make things and make that money stretch to be able to pull off the kind of the length of the campaign and, you know, make sure it's hitting all those beats and the bars that you want to hit.
Tom, one thing that Bianca kind of brought up when we were doing a bit of a kind of pre-interview discussion was how most creatives tend to see TV as the kind of holy grail of advertising briefs, where you two are kind of medium agnostic in some ways and you create for whatever platform kind of suits the idea. I mean, we talked about Graham before. The work that I think I love personally is the work that you did for the New York Times as well. I'd be curious to hear more about your process and, you know, when you're perhaps working in a space where you haven't created for before, especially when collaborating with other creatives or production partners in the execution phase. How do you get things done when you're doing something that you've never done before?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with this job is that there's no 2 days or 2 jobs are the same. Like, it's always different because it all comes from what the idea is or where you end up. And that can sometimes be you'll end up somewhere that you had no intention of ending up in, or a space that you didn't even plan to play in. And that's the beauty of it, I think, is that you are always building on things and it is evolving as you're working through stuff. So it's hard to say you could plan for it, but with the work, I think we were lucky in that with our career early on, we were kind of mentored by a lot of different kind of talents too, and a lot of different non-traditional maybe thinkers. I think that really influenced how we kind of tackled briefs. Like, we didn't, maybe it was the time we joined advertising even, I think it was digital was becoming this big thing and big push within the industry, and we kind of fell in to that right as it was on the rise. And I think because of that, we sort of sat around like producers and, you know, digital creatives and other people that weren't traditional advertising creatives as such, in that your team was, you know, copywriter, art director, and, you know, that had this love of TV, and the spend on TV was maybe declining a little bit in Australia and it was shifting to digital. So I feel like our strengths from that became like this hybrid of a lot of different sort of talents. Like, you know, over the years we've worked in sort of digital agencies and done everything from like site design kind of stuff right through to like social campaigns to TV ads to everything. So we have got a broad mix with creative thinking. Our job is subjective. Like, the work you do is totally subjective. There's no right or wrong way to go about it. And I think you know, an idea is an idea, and, you know, it can come from anywhere, and how that comes to life can really depend on, you know, where you want to take it and the influence that you have around you at the time.
The ideas are subjective, but I mean, aren't the kind of the business goals, you know, very objective? Yeah. Like, you know, is there a lot of that kind of pressure there, like, you know, to get, you know, I guess, specific results from a campaign?
Like,
does that kind of figure into your thinking?
I mean, we have really tight briefs that you're working to. I mean, from that, you know, the strategy is always really sound and you're working off that to solve a business problem. You're just solving it with a creative lens. And, you know, of course that stuff is measurable and you're trying to, you know, get the best results and solve that business problem, you know, for a client. So it definitely is that. I think when I mean subjective, I mean in what work appeals to some people and, you know, what's going to resonate, you know, it is taste too, and what you think is right. And, you know, people put their own approach to it or their own techniques to it that make it, you know, that feels like their work in a way as well, as much as it is, you know, right for the brand as well. And I think it's, you know, over time with experience and the more work you do, you learn to, you know, work out different sort of techniques and how to end up in the right space for certain ideas and the right, you know, what's going to have the right reach or have PR potential, or, you know, just really solve that business problem in the most effective and efficient way.
Yeah, I mean, you're in this industry where you've got sort of this endless opportunity to create an experience and an enormous variety of things. So what excites you guys right now?
I think in the sweet spot for me is if you can try and create work or anything that sort of can influence culture or become part of culture or live on in that regard. I mean, that's pretty exciting. And then I think also, like, in our industry, the thing that probably excites me the most, I think, is like change. I mean, there's so much new tech and new ways to approach things, and the way people consume content and advertising, everything is changing sort of like every 6 months or whatever. There's some new platform or new way or new piece of tech that's the big thing. So with all that comes like new and exciting ways to sort of take what might be an original sort of human truth or insight or a business problem and then present it in a different way, or or think about how that can be communicated to people through a new platform or something. So I think all that stuff's pretty exciting to me. And just the way you can take something that's maybe like really fine, like a hit the nail on the head on a human truth or something that we're used to interacting with, and then take that and twist it and make it seem like something completely new.
Absolutely. George, I think that drives a lot of us here as well. Tom, is there anything that's really exciting you about the work you're doing or something you're wanting to do?
I think the thing at the moment is that we're in this industry, we're creating way more than we ever did, more often too. Like, I don't think we've ever been through a phase where people want more content more regularly like than ever. So you're really expected to be turning stuff around quicker. And I think that's quite exciting in that I don't think that's going to go away too. Like with the current landscape of things, people want stuff more frequently all the time, and it's more interesting, and they want it to stretch further. So quality storytelling, humor, like good utilities, all those kind of things are in more demand, and that's exciting for me. And that there's never been more demand for kind of this skill set, and you're kind of seeing that spread now where it's not only in agencies, like brands themselves are starting to take these things and value creativity and bring it in-house and try and do their own stuff within their own businesses. And I think that is really exciting that creativity is at the core of some of these bigger businesses now. You'll see it with Apple or and Google. They've embraced it so much. They're sort of building their creativity capabilities inwards, and then they're spreading that outwards through their marketing and then also through other facets of the business. And I think that's really exciting to see how much advertising kind of thinking and stuff is permeating into other parts of brands and culture as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it's funny you mentioned that sort of extreme demand for content, because that's definitely something I have a love-hate relationship with. There are positive and very negative sides to it. And I'm wondering, so you've been in this industry for, a long time in Melbourne and then again in New York for about a year. What would you change about the ad industry?
Loaded question.
That's a good question.
Do we have enough time?
How long have you got? This goes for a couple of hours, yeah?
What would I change? I think it's a time pressure industry. You're often up against the clock, I think, for a lot of the time, and that can be testing at times. I mean, I think that there is something to be said that when you're under pressure, you do sometimes come up with some cracker ideas, and that can be also be a strength, not only not necessarily a weakness, but time's a big one. To distill a brief and a problem and then try and come at it from new ways and just sort of really interrogate it, that can sometimes take time. And I think, for me, I think the main thing is just the industry is a high pressure, high turnaround kind of industry. And sometimes it would be nice to have a bit more time just to really consider problems and take them exactly where you want to take them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the one thing that I hear from Bianca every time we have our weekly checkups. I mean, she always kind of mentions how, work-life balance seems to be a bit inverted in some ways in the States compared to Australia. Is that something that's been kind of your experience? And, how do you manage that with your own lives?
Yeah, I think, Australians have an amazing knack, I think, for working hard but working smart. I think is sort of the... And you see that so much in all the work and that it's just they're clever, I think, in about how to get the best out of work in the right amount of time. I think this isn't to discredit America or anything. I'm just saying that I feel like they're very much work hard but not necessarily smart sometimes.
But how does that manifest?
I think sometimes it's just like you'll die at your desk kind of attitude. Some people just like get in there and just it's on 24/7. But I find that I think especially for me, like creative thinking sometimes, like we used to call it at Clem's and stuff, the overnight test. Like you can't with something. If you're happy with it, you need to sort of sleep on it and just let it mull on it for a little bit and you come back to it fresh. You're like, oh, okay, I can see now where the holes are that I didn't see yesterday. But now I know exactly how to
play. It's like never make music when you're stoned. Do you ever do that?
Is that a rule?
Yeah, that's a total rule. You always have to listen to it sober.
I feel like that rule applies to a lot of things when you start. I mean, to George's point, I agree. I think it's the subconscious thought is sometimes where the best thinking can come from. But your brain can only do so much of a burst before it's exhausted. It's like running a marathon. Your muscles will wear out after a while. Like your legs get tired and so does your brain, I think. Like, and sometimes I think, letting you, sit with an idea and sit on it, stuff will figure itself out in the back of your head and then come to fruition the next day or the next, the next couple of hours once you've had a break from it. But, America is, I do think their working culture is they define themselves by their work more than maybe Australians do. I think Australians have that attitude that's very Australian of, they They work to live, not live to work a bit. And I think over here, there's more layers in the process of how you do stuff. And that's not necessarily always a bad thing. I think it's just more processes you have to move through before you can get work out the door or, you know, bring stuff to life.
That is the truth. So, I mean, where do you guys see advertising going? Are there any tools or trends that you're particularly excited about?
It's a hard one to say sometimes. Like, I'm not even 100% sure where. I haven't even thought about this in such a long time, really. Like, I feel like, God, it could go in multiple different ways. I do think you're going to see, at the moment, trends that are coming out is I do think more and more brands are starting to, you know, they're going to build their internal capabilities more. And I think advertising and industry is, I do think creative thinking is as valued as ever, but I think maybe some agencies will shrink before they get bigger again as they adapt to that change, as more brands start doing stuff in-house more and start, you know, work with agencies in different ways and how they make content together. Like, I think, I mean, George was joking the other day, and I think he's probably true, though, that there's something to be said that I think any brand at the moment is, you know, two wrong steps away from making a Pepsi ad. Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, I think... there's a lot of knowledge that those advertising agencies in general still have that I think brands trying to build internal creative capabilities still have a lot to learn from them as well. And I think you see that now, a lot of advertising creatives jumping to brands like Facebook and Airbnb and Google and these other things to help them build those capabilities. And I don't think that trend's going to stop anytime soon. I think that is going to continue, and it'll be interesting to see how that does impact the advertising industry and the agencies that have been around for years and years now, and you know, how they're going to cope with that change of losing talent.
Yeah, we talk a lot about that on the podcast, and I, you know, it's definitely something that comes up all the time. Would you guys ever consider working in-house somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not against the idea of that. I think it'd be incredibly interesting. I do love, I think, I've never done it, so I feel like I can't judge it, you know, or have an opinion on it yet, but it's definitely something I'd be interested to see how that works.
I think the hard thing, I reckon, going from to be someone that switched from advertising to working a brand would be focusing on just one brand the whole time. Like the beauty and the thing that keeps me interested in advertising is you come in one week and you're on this brief and you're working on, you know, you might be working on automotive, but then you're working on retail, then you're working on, you know, causal kind of brief or something. So it's just every time you're getting so much change, and sometimes it's like super interesting, other times it's more vanilla, but that's the variety, like the spice of life there, I guess, is kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you say that though, because I found when I was in agencies, you know, let's say I might have like four or five clients I'd be working on, I found even that like limiting compared to coming, you know, here on Jackie Winterside, where every single project is a different client and a different artist, you know, and I it's funny because it's almost like you're always searching for more variety. It's hard to beat
definitely.
It.
Yeah.
Speaking of variety and the spice of life, what is the kind of the dream and end goal for you guys? I mean, where are the McQueens 10 years from now?
I don't think it's something we ever talk about, do we, George? Like, I feel like we're just rolling with the punches at the moment. But
I think we work well together. I mean, we've kind of, I think, worked that out now, which is kind of good to know. But I'm not exactly sure whether, I mean, advertising's great. You do get a lot out of it. The one thing I would say, I reckon, is years in advertising, you learn so many new skill sets that you don't realize they apply to so many other facets of, say, other businesses or brands or things. But when you start applying them to other aspects outside of advertising and in your life, you're like, oh, wow, I could go do this now, and I'd sort of have a rough idea of how to approach that. And even to what you guys were saying earlier, when you, I think our skill set has sort of been born from not maybe your traditional kind of advertising campaigns, you've been exposed to all these little weird sort of, you know, projects and processes that you've sort of picked up things over the time that you're like, oh, wow, I could probably go and start this now or try this. Or you've got a bit of an inkling or an insight into sort of areas that you may not have thought you'd ever delve into. But now it's like, oh, that might be a thing I could try in the future.
Yeah, it's an incredibly versatile field. I think that's kind of why I love it kind of so much. And yeah, no, I'm really excited to see where you guys take it. Where can we find out more about you, about what you've done and about where you're going if people want to kind of follow your work or learn more about you?
If you want to learn more about us, you could look at McQueenMcQueen.com. That's our website. There's probably stuff on there. If you want to take a look through some of our work and or reach out to us and ask us any questions, like, we're more than happy to chat to anyone that wants to get into advertising or, you know, wants to just talk.
I'm definitely just going to be sending you weird questions about twins. You know I'm going to.
Yeah, so wait, what is your favorite twin movie? Like, do you have a particular twin pop culture recommendation or endorsement?
It has to be Twin.
Definitely New York Minute.
Twins is oh my God, New York Minute. No, Bianca wins. That's the best.
Forgot about that one.
I think we'll leave it there. Tom, George, thank you so much for your time. Good luck in New York, and look forward to following your adventures in the next decade. Wrapping up, as we like to do every week, is the most Melbourne and most New York thing that we've seen throughout the week. Lara, what's come across your eyeballs?
Oh, I mean, look, we mentioned this at the top of the show, but it really has to be the Crossword Festival. I mean, we just have this little crossword club with some friends of ours, headed up by the wonderful Penny Modra, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and Tommy Chanks, who is another wonderful person. And
Man about town.
And, you know, it's just a fun thing we do once a month. And you know, over time, we've been talking about how great it would be to run a Crossword Festival. And then somehow it escalated into this enormous thing that was run, you know, in collaboration with the NGV and Melbourne Design Week. And it was just incredible. And for me, as the ultimate word nerd, it was so satisfying to see so many people rally around, you know, something quite so nerdy.
Yeah, look, it was great to have it as part of Melbourne Design Week, which is, you know, a fantastic event and amazing to see so many people engaged in visual culture in that way.
Man, crossworders are into it.
Crosswords are very into it. Great bags, by the way. Great totes. That's actually my most Melbourne thing of the moment, which is I went to the Art Book Fair, which is part of Design Week in the NGV. I really think they should have just renamed it the Tote Bag Fair. Because, like, that was, it's like, how
honestly,
many tote
I would
bags,
enjoy that more. Is that a bad thing to say?
It shouldn't be. Like, no, like, I think if you like making tote bags, and there's nothing wrong with tote bags, just make a tote bag fair.
Oh, good.
Because
I can't
tote bags
have
are awesome.
Tote bags.
You could never have enough,
you guys,
tote bags.
We shouldn't even air this. This is our next $1 million idea.
Fuck. Okay.
The tote bag fair.
No one. Okay.
No one steal it. Copyright.
We should totally do that. Okay. B, what about New York? Anything happen?
I don't really have a New York thing, but I have like a podcast thing. And this actually comes from a tweet from a friend of Jackie Winter, Miss Brady Lancaster,
who I saw at the Art Book Fair.
Yes,
actually.
I'm sure you did. But she stumbled upon a shirt on an online shopping website, which was hilariously captioned, podcast co-host sleeveless top in black.
Oh, yes, I've heard of this.
And I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm not doing the podcasting thing right, because I'm definitely not wearing a silk black, slightly oversized buttoned up sleeveless top. I am in my gym gear.
What? Jeremy and I both are.
Yeah, speak for yourself. Okay, thank you so much, Lara.
Thank you.
Thank you, B.
Thank you.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. We are also now on Stitcher as well as Spotify, so there's no excuse to not listen to us anymore. You must be listening. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/Jackie Winter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details on our website, again, jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.